purpose of submitting legislative concepts as committee bills. Representative Holby.
Oh, geez.
Just read the numbers.
Mr. Chair, I move House Business and Labor Committee introduce as committee bills LC 2336, 2268, 3077, 2888, 2437, 3137, 2731, 2494, 2729, 2729-1, 2729-2, 2945, 2945-1, 3368, 2596, 2135, 3521, 1910, 1913, 3596, 2894, and 3362.
Great. Representative Holby has moved the following LCs for the purpose of becoming committee bills. LC 2336, LC 2268, LC 3077, LC 2880, LC 2437, LC 3137, LC 2731, LC 2494, LC 2729, LC 2729-1, LC 2729-2, LC 2945, LC 2945-1, LC 3368, LC 2596, LC 2135, LC 3521, excuse me, LC 1910, LC 1913, LC 3596, LC 2894, and LC 3362 to be submitted as committee bills. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
Could you explain each and every one of those to me?
No, I cannot. I'll remind the committee again, in no way, shape, or form is anyone committed to voting for or against any of these things. They're just House Business and Labor Committee bills. Is there any other questions that I can answer or any other comments or discussion? If not, is there any objection? If not, so moved. Alrighty. I'm going to open the first two. I'm going to hear at once because I think I understand we're combining the two together. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2473 and a public hearing on House Bill 2474. And I would like Angie Dilks and Nathan Phillips, please, to come forward and talk to us about this stuff. Angie, if you're ready, go ahead.
All right. Well, Chair Schaffler, members of the committee, thanks for taking the time to hear our bills today. My name is Angie Dilks, and I'm here on behalf of the National Electrical Contractors Association. And as often happens in this process, we've come a long ways from when we submitted our ideas to Legislative Council to where we are today. So with your indulgence, we'd like to talk you through what it is that we intend for these bills to do, and as the chair mentioned, we would like to combine them and actually delete several components in the first of the bills we're hearing today. With me today is Nathan Phillips, who's my technical expert, so I'm going to turn it over to him to walk the committee through what we intend to do.
Great. Go ahead, Nathan.
Thank you, Representative Schaffler and members of the committee. In House Bill 2473, I think that we're going to amend out the first two sections, or section two and three. But what we would like to do is reduce the required term of apprenticeship for limited journeyman sign electricians, limited journeyman stage electricians, and Class A limited energy technicians. The sign and stage electricians currently have a four-year apprenticeship, and the amount of electrical work that they actually do is fairly limited, and they really only need and want a two-year program, and we need to change the statute to make that possible for them. And the Class A limited energy technicians are also a four-year program, and that industry has asked to reduce their training to 3 years because there is quite a shortage of people, and the training that's required for that work can be done in 3 years. And I am an electrical contractor and employ quite a few Class A limited energy technicians, and am in favor of that. This bill also limits the work of limited maintenance electricians to systems that are less than 600 volts phase to phase. These are electricians who have minimal training and do only maintenance work, can't extend circuits, and 600-volt systems are what we would call high-voltage systems, and there's a lot of hazards involved, and they're really not trained to that. So, and most of them aren't doing it, but there are a few that are out there being exposed to unsafe conditions and also exposing the public to unsafe conditions. And then House Bill 2474, which is the companion bill, is really intended just to eliminate unused licenses. There's about four or five or six licenses in here that, of which there are no license holders, and there really is no reason to still have those licenses in statute, so this bill just eliminates them, and it's fairly uncontroversial.
Great. I do have a question. There's been a lot of questions about these bills. I've shared a lot of them with Ms. Dilks and Mr. Phillips. Is there anybody in any of these that has a job right now that has a limited license that will be denied a limited license when this, in any of this language, becomes the law? That's what I want to know.
Chair Shoffler, that's certainly not our intention. It's our understanding, after working with the Building Codes Division, that the licenses that we're eliminating, no one currently holds them.
As I've heard from the railroads, they said they were okay after some carpenters came forward. I just want to get this on the record. Laborers have some limited license for tunnel work. All those folks have come to me and said, no, we've read it, we're okay. I just want to get it on the record that we're not going to deny anybody ability to make a living as we pass this language, because that's really important to me.
Well, Mr.
And
Chair,
it is to you too.
I don't personally have that authority, but it's certainly not our intention.
Right.
Mr. Chair, as far as I know, the reports from Building Codes Division about how many licensees there are in all the categories have shown zero in all of these categories.
Okay.
That's why we selected
them. Makes perfect sense. Any questions or comments or concerns? I'll have these nice people up here. All righty then.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Would anyone else like to testify on House Bills 2473 or House Bill 2474? Today, Mike, come on up. And we're gonna, you know, they're gonna work these bills. We're gonna have another, at least one more public hearing, and let it out there what we're gonna do, and then people can digest this, and then we'll work it. So, just in case people are worried about it all, Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair and Committee, for the record, my name is Mike Sullivan. I live at 1727 Northeast 18th Street in McMinnville, Oregon. I am the political director for the Association of Western Pulp and Paper Workers, also known as AWPPW. APPW wants to know for sure that there are no changes to the current language for electrician, limited journeyman, manufacturing plant, or the PJ license. AWPPW is quite happy with the current language and really doesn't want to see any changes to it. And that's all I have. If anybody has any questions for me, I have a lot more questions to ask of you, I guess.
Any Representative Holby?
What license was that? Again, you were... Could you describe what that license is that you just referenced?
The license is the industrial electrician that works... Representative Holby. The license I'm describing is the industrial limited electrician that are used in the plants for AWPPW. In other words, they're licensed electricians that normally do the work in the plants.
Thank you.
So you're saying that if this language passes, they'll be denied their license?
Chair Shoffman, that's my question.
Oh.
Is there any
change? That's the question I just asked, Mike, and I want somebody to come forward if they have the answer to that and tell me.
Well, I know that, Chair, but I am under an instruction to make sure that AWPPW is put on the record as well.
Right, and I'm giving everyone who's interested in this bill that charge to make sure that doesn't happen.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot. Anyone else want to testify to House Bills 2473 and House Bill 2474? Any more? There's no one to ask any questions. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bills 2473 and House Bill 2474 and open the public hearing on House Bill 2475.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2475 provides that the Electrical and Elevator Board has the exclusive authority to adopt rules regulating the usage of a written request by a licensed supervising electrician as adequate authority for a person who sells energy to energize an electrical installation.
Ms. Dilks and Nathan Phillips, again, please.
Chair Schaffler, members of the committee, again, Angie Dilk and Nathan Phillips with the National Electrical Contractors Association. And just to get on the record, we, in drafting the bill, council gave the Electrical and Elevator Board exclusive authority, and that was not our intention. So we'll be looking for amendments to this to make it workable for the agency as well. So, and Nathan will talk about the.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. This bill is fairly simple. The statutes currently provide that an electrical contractor, through their supervising electrician, can order the utility to energize a service or an electrical installation when there hasn't been an inspection. And this is frequently used when you do a service change on someone's house or some rural work where you need to get it re-energized, but there isn't time for an inspection before the utility comes out. And after they energize it, the utility is supposed to assure that it then gets inspected. Well, there aren't any rules that regulate this, and so we have some utilities that won't energize systems when the electricians write the letter, and then we have other utilities that don't assure that that they get inspected after they've been energized. And the major utilities in the state all follow this procedure the same way that the rules would be written, but there are some of the smaller ones that don't. And so in order to get statewide consistency on this, we wanted to have the authority to write rules that would assure that all utilities follow the same set of standards. And I think, again, that this is a fairly uncontroversial. Most of the big players in the state are already doing pretty much exactly what we would want the rules to say, and it would actually help them because it would give them clear guidelines to follow in implementing this existing statute.
Great. Any questions? Alrighty then, thank you. Would anyone else like to testify on House Bill 2475? If not, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2475 and open up my public hearing on House Bill 2476. I'm surprised my carpenter friend isn't coming.
I was listening.
House Bill 2476 requires a public body to require proof that a person contracting to perform building trade work for a public body is properly licensed, and it also prohibits a non-compliant public body from recovering certain damages, such as property damage, or the cost of correcting negligent or improper work from an unlicensed person.
Okay, thank you. Doug Aljetz, hope I said that right, and Paul Phillips, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name is Paul Phillips, representing the National Electrical Contractors Association. Today I have Doug Aljetz here with us, who is a contractor, and I'd like him to start the testimony, if that's okay with you, Mr. Chair.
I'd like to ask, Mr. Chairman, if I may, I'd like to ask for your support of this bill.
Sir, for the record, you got to identify yourself.
My name is Doug Aljetz, sorry. I'm president of Kaiser Electric. I'd like you to ask for your support of this bill. I believe it would help improve compliance with state law for those companies coming into the state from outside the state. State agencies would be required to comply with the state same contracting laws as private individuals and Oregon companies. Our company, Kaiser Electric, is licensed in 9 states. And when I go into those states, or before I go into those states, I have to get an electrical contractor's license. I have to make sure that I employ an electrical supervisor or master electrician. All my employees need to be licensed, plus I need to comply with the state's insurance laws, workman's comp, liability insurance, etc. This past year, our company participated in the fire restoration of Marion County Courthouse. In that process, we replaced the entire electrical system, the security cameras, the fire alarm system, and all the voice and data. The courtrooms themselves fall under the jurisdiction of the Oregon Judicial Department. When it came time to replace the courtroom cameras and monitoring systems, the Department of Justice didn't hire my company or any other local company. They hired a company from Tennessee. In itself, this is not wrong. However, this company made no effort to comply with Oregon's licensing laws, either the company or their employees. Without licensing, they were not able to apply for a permit to perform the work, which is against the law. It is also unlikely that they registered with the Secretary of State, or they carried liability insurance, had workman's compensation on their employees, and probably aren't going to be paying income taxes on their profits this year. A building codes compliance officer cited and fined the workers and the company. However, when this was brought to the attention of the Department of Justice, they denied any wrongdoing. They stated they had just hired the company to perform the work, and it was the company's responsibility to comply with contracting laws, state contracting laws. Passage of this bill, I believe, would shortcut this problem by alerting state agencies to the requirements of contracting in the state of Oregon and require them to follow the law. I urge you to support this legislation. Any questions?
Paul, you want to say something?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, proof of licensure is an important element of quality control in this state. Our goal is to have those licenses checked at the front end. My company, PacWest, deals with NECA contractors all over the state, electrical contractors all over the state that build on public jobs. A major part of the RFP in most, if not all, is a statement that you say you are properly licensed to do business in the state of Oregon. This illustration that Mr. Allgetz put would have been short-circuited if, in fact, that requirement to be licensed would have been checked at that point and stopped at that point. So we have a long history in the state of Oregon protecting the health and safety of our people by requiring training, requiring our efforts, requiring the licensure that the electricians of the state take very, very personally. We did not introduce this bill saying, here's a required form, here's a mandate, we want you to do it this specific way, because every jurisdiction is different, whether it be a state agency, a city or county political subdivision. What we did is allow for monetary loss if they don't check it, a potential loss. So what we'd really like to do is to make sure that the jurisdictions do require a licensure and do check those licenses. We've come before you, many of you, over the years and talked about the fact that we really, to a large extent, have enough laws. But occasionally we come in looking for a tweak to make sure enforcement and compliance is a key. And that's what we're trying to do here today. So, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we would strongly support House Bill 2476. Thank you.
You're exactly right. Everybody doing this work has to have a license here in the state of Oregon, and that's a no-brainer. There's some folks that are going to ask some questions in a minute having to do with the timing, when, is it at the time of bid, before that. And I just ask you to, when you hear their comments and concerns, to just try and answer them. You don't have to do it here in this room, but that's what I would like. But you're right. I don't think anyone in this room disagrees that anyone doing any wiring in the state of Oregon, they should have a license and be properly insured and bonded. Any questions for these gentlemen? Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I totally agree about this licensing thing. It only makes sense. I guess my only question would be, the remedy in this bill seems to be to let these unlicensed contractors totally off the hook, and I don't exactly see what the connection is. I mean, if they do shoddy work, it seems like you're then punishing the taxpayers by letting them off, and they don't have to pay any damages. And I mean, why would the penalty be they just...
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rosenbaum, generally there's not the employee or the company doing the work doesn't get off scot-free, because building codes will fine those people for not having a license.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, my name is Paul Phillips. Representative Rosenbaum, you put your finger right on it. We're trying to find a way that these folks wouldn't get hired in the first place without proper license, their own business license as well as their employees. And if there's a downside, and the easiest way to do it is if you're in the final selection process and you've selected the most qualified low bidder and this is the person you're going to go with, but if they don't have the licenses, you go to the next one in line, this issue would be moot because you would never get to that point. So what we're trying to do is give an incentive to the agency to actually follow the law and the requirement out there. And we are open. If you have a better way to get that done, we'd love to have that done. But unfortunately, across the state, jurisdictions do things differently, and this was our best solution to really get their attention.
Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I appreciate the intent of this bill. You know, I totally support the intent. I guess my question is, I believe it's already a law that people have to have licenses to perform this work, and why did you stop at public bodies? It seems like everybody should perhaps require proofs that they are hiring licensed people to perform work.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, my name is Paul Phillips. We are, again, open to any suggestions that you might have in this process. This is one, however, what my contractors came up with a number of times, and it's frustrating when the RFP documents, Mr. Chair, call for a licensure, but a public agency doesn't even check it. So that was one step at a time, and I'm a big believer in incrementalism. If we can get this done, and then you might see us back again.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Doug Aljetz again. I, as a contractor, if I hire an unlicensed electrician, I'm subject to a fine. And I think private individuals who hire people unlicensed are subject to fines. So, I mean, that part of the that side of the law is already in effect.
And the public agency ain't asking, why should the regular person ask? So I guess it is step by step, brick by brick. Any more questions? For these nice guys? Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
I'd like Greg Miller, John Oschel, and Amy Joyce, please, to come on up. Greg, go ahead. Looks like you're ready to go.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Greg Miller. I'm here today representing the Associated General Contractors. Members of my association, there are approximately 1,100 in Oregon and Southwest Washington. Here today just to register a concern about the bill. First of all, AGC is committed to protecting the integrity of the construction industry and the licensing system that's set up in the state. But the bill as written is somewhat vague in our eyes in terms of what would be required and who would be required of in the licensure reporting slash monitoring of the specifically the general contractor. So just wanted to be brief in registering concern. Would be willing to work with a work group if it's the pleasure of the committee to try to iron out the details of the bill and get some specificity as to what is going to be required.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation. Similar concerns from ODOT. What we currently do when we have a contract is we ensure that the contractor is licensed and bonded, and by that we're ensuring that they have the appropriate licenses to do work. Our concern is that with the liability shifting, we'd need to go beyond that to every sub and every employee on a job site and collect perhaps a stack of proof of licensures at a pre-construction meeting to prove that every person on that job site has the appropriate license. From the first witness testimony, I think perhaps that's not the intent of the bill, that what we're doing today is what the intent is. We're in the business of doing construction contracts, not in the similar businesses, Department of Justice. So I don't think we'd be in the same situation. So we would ask for those clarifications that we're not requiring ODOT to go down to the level of every employee and subcontractor for licensure proof.
Chair Schaffner, members of the committee, I'm John O'Shell with the Association of Oregon Counties. I think for most of my testimony today focused on the smaller agencies. They probably don't have large expert staff, but in fact do contracting. We'd strongly support the goal of where we're trying to get. We strongly support whatever tools we can get, you can get, to make sure this happens. Parts of this probably are appropriate, parts of it we frankly have problems with. A little bit of summary. not necessarily summary, but I perceive sort of three types of issues we have out there if we start shifting where the agencies have to figure out who needs to be licensed. In many cases, that is not the case. They define the work they want done and have the expectation that the contractor will understand who needs to be licensed for what. I think that is probably the case in many agencies. If we want to shift that policy, we obviously have a major educational effort to do so the agencies have a better understanding of which trades need licensing. That will be tricky. Most of you involved in any kind of licensing know that every license out there has that gray area where people are trying to figure out if it needs to be licensed or not. We'd have a bunch of people who would have to figure out a lot of these things. I think with some education we can probably get there, but we need to understand that we have that issue to resolve if we're going to have all of a sudden the agencies understanding what licenses are needed for all the various nuances of work. The second area has to do with the uninformed contractors, clearly a problem. Our expectation is that they do know when you have an out-of-state contractor and they don't understand our rules ahead of time. We need to make sure we have some sort of mechanism to make sure they know and understand. Don't have a good answer for you on that one, but clearly is a goal that is needed. And, of course, the last one is we do have the bandits out there who try and sneak some shoddy work done with someone that is uncertified. And I think our biggest problem with this bill is this appears that if we don't have a mechanism in place to catch them, they get off the hook with basically we can't take any action against them. That's our main objection to the existing language in the bill. If we can come up with some other way to get more assurances of licenses, we will actively support what we can to do that. We will actively support any sort of training to get better compliance.
You know, if Marion County can't catch people that don't have a license, I don't know who can. I think it does. It is the responsibility is on the contracting agency to make sure people have licenses. I mean, that's what's in the law already. We should be doing this already is my point. Now, here's what are there any questions of these nice people? Here's what I want you all to do. I'm not creating a task force or a work group or any of that. If you got problems or issues with this bill and you think it can be made better, you all get together and make it better. But for me to sit here and say, it's okay for the example that just was used. It's okay for that contracting agency to go ahead and hire that contractor from out of state with no license and do that work. Then why should John Q. Public care about it? And why should we even have a licensing process then? So go on out there, work with them, come back with something we're all happy with, and we'll see what happens. Any more comments or questions? Representative Esquivel.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I was just thinking out loud here, could we not incorporate this in an RFP and or an RFQ and then end up making it part of the letting of the contract that all people would be contractors in the state of Oregon that worked on the... I mean, I think what I'm suspicioning here, we're taking a 105 howitzer and trying to kill an ant. And I think we could incorporate that in our standard operating procedures to make it part of the contractual agreement that you do have people licensed in the state of Oregon that works on this project. Is that too simple, or anyone?
Chair Schaffler, Representative Esquivel. I like the concept. It's the details. And the specific one thinking for I'm at the local agency and possibly by getting some workforce summoned through DAS to develop the list. If you look at the bill on lines 8 and 9, you know, there's this list of ORSs, including some of them are listing entire chapters of ORSs. There needs to be some clarity as to what type of work is needed. Potentially something that is a standard boilerplate that can be attached to a contract that says these are the type of activities that require licenses, I think would be a very useful tool and should be in contracts.
And Chair Schaffler, Representative Esquivel, you can see from our written testimony, ODOT intends to do exactly what Representative Esquivel is presenting. Our concern is that with the language of the bill and the possibility of cost shifting or liability shifting of, in theory, millions of dollars of taxpayer money, we'd be hiring people to review licensures of every employee and such on the job site. Although, again, from the first witness's testimony, it sounds like that's not what they're driving at, that we get to the contractor and make those requirements, and we certainly do that.
Well, if we build a bridge and it falls down, we find out the contractor didn't have a license, we're going to be on the hook, too. I mean, I'm just using a real simple, logical example. They're never going to happen because I know you're on the job, but
Any more comments or questions? I ask all of you to get together and work on this, and let's make sure everybody has a license in Oregon. That's all I want. Alrighty, thank you very much. I'm going to close. Is there anyone else that would like to testify to House Bill 2476 today? Come on up, sir.
Sorry, no,
that's quite all right.
Just sign up.
Amanda, you want to speak to this? Okay, ma'am, come on.
Chair Schaffler, I'm Alex Kyler. I'm legislative analyst with the City of Eugene. Eugene is opposed to House Bill 2476 for many of the reasons that the previous panel indicated. We feel that while we do address these kinds of things in the RFP and the implementation of the work to follow the job site from a day-to-day basis to make sure that all the contractors and subcontractors have licenses, we think is an additional task. And to suggest that we would then waive our ability to make a claim for damages in the event of negligence or some other breach because there wasn't a licensed person on the job seems to be kind of getting at the problem in the wrong way. We've heard of some other legislative concepts that are being advanced this session that deal with better training of workers and standards for higher quality construction. We're likely to support those, but this approach we think really does put us at a good deal of risk.
Chair Schaffler, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Amanda Rich, and I'm here this afternoon testifying for the Special Districts Association of Oregon. And we, too, have concerns about this bill. We actually have a number of districts, when I've talked to them, say that this is a practice for them, that they try to make sure, at least for the folks that they are directly contracting with, that they do have proof of licensure. Others don't. We think that it's a good best practice to do so, and for those that you have direct contract and are directly contracting with, that it's probably a good idea. But when you get down to first tier, second tier, the layers of subs, being able to assure that everyone who is possibly working on a public contract has, that you're getting faxes of all those copies of licensures, and it'd be very difficult to try to implement this sort of legislation. And plus, we do have concerns about what the penalty clause, so to speak, that I'm sure you've heard folks talk about today. So, frankly, if you're going to be work grouping this bill, we'd love to be a part of that. And I just wanted to make sure that our concerns were noted for the record.
Any questions? Well, I would suggest you all get a hold of the proponents of the bill and see if you can work something out, come back with a better product, and we'll just see what happens. All right.
Thank you
very much. All righty then. Now I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2476, and I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2254.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2254 was pre-session filed to request the Bureau of Labor and Industries. We had the first hearing on this bill on February 7th. It imposes a 45-day timeline for an employer to provide copies or allow inspection of personnel records. Also allows a time extension upon the agreement of the employer and employee if they cannot procure, the employer cannot procure those records within that time frame. And it also establishes a civil penalty up to $1,000 for violations. There is no amendment before you, and there may be a fiscal impact. I just haven't received the statement yet, and there is no revenue impact.
Alrighty then. I don't have anyone signed up to testify on House Bill 2254. Is there anyone here that would like to testify on House Bill 2254? If not, I'm going to close the public hearing, open a working session on House Bill 2254, and I would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2254 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Holvey moves House Bill 2254 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? All right, Kristen, go ahead and call the roll then.
Aye.
Excuse me.
Aye.
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 Aye. Okay, so moved. Does this need to be carried? Representative Esquivel?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move that we put this on the consent calendar.
Representative Esquivel moves House Bill 2254 to the consent calendar. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? And then so moved. I'll close the work session on House Bill 2254 and open a work session, a public hearing on House Bill 2255.
House Bill 2255, also a pre-session bill filed from Boley, also heard on February 7th, makes discrimination against an employee for filing a wage claim or reporting violations of working conditions, minimum wage, and overtime laws an unlawful employment practice. It also clarifies that compensatory damages are an available remedy.
All right, I'd like to call Don Schellenberg and Dan Gardner. Why don't you come on up, Dan? I think there's going to be some questions for you. Let's get you up here. You and Don can arm wrestle.
What are you betting on?
Like there's a referee.
Yeah.
Now, Dan, I'd never bet against a good union, man. You know. Go ahead, Mr. Schellenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Don Schellenberg, representing the Oregon Farm Bureau. And while we do not oppose the bill, we do have concerns and questions about the impact of House Bill 2255. First, let me start right up front that Farm Bureau does not support discrimination, nor would we seek to protect employers guilty of discrimination. And that is not the reason for our concerns. The effect of the bill is to add an administrative remedy in Section 1 in addition to the civil remedy because an employee has made a wage claim. In Section 2, the bill adds both an administrative remedy and a civil remedy because of an employee complaint that the employee has not been paid wages in accordance with the law. Finally, Section 3 of the bill allows the court to award compensatory damages, which includes punitive damages for pain and suffering. Our concern is that there will be those situations where there may be an unintentional action. This could be as simple as a typographical error by the bookkeeper. Section 2 simply says the employee, quote, has made a complaint. It doesn't say how the complaint is filed or with whom it is filed. Section 2 just says if the complaint is filed, the employer cannot discriminate against the employee. No problem with that, but discrimination is in the eye of the beholder. For example, you're operating a small crew that routinely performs several different functions, one of which takes three members and is less desirable physically than the other ones. One of the employees working in the more desirable activity complains to the employer about their paycheck. 2 days later, one of the crew members is absent that normally works on the less desirable activity. However, it takes all three members for that crew to function. The employee, having complained, being the only other employee who has worked on that job before, and without even thinking about it, the employer automatically sends the employee who complained about their paycheck to that work activity. The employee may quickly conclude that the employer is discriminating against them and file a charge when that isn't the case at all. Our second concern is that an employee can use the system to manipulate the work environment. All the employee has to do is complain about their paycheck, whether true or not, and then charge discrimination whenever the employer asks them to do something they don't want to do. Our third concern is the language in Section 3 that allows compensatory damages, including pain and suffering. Time and again, agriculture employers have been sent what are called demand letters. Based on a complaint, legal aid attorneys for workers send a letter listing a series of allegations for which they will sue the employer. This representation is of no cost to the worker. Often the demand letter concludes with an offer to settle out of court for a substantial sum. The employer is then over the barrel, finding that the attorney fee which he has to pay, unlike the employee who is getting free legal service, is nearly as much or more than the settlement amount offered, even though the employer believes he or she is innocent. When considering the time involved, providing information to the attorney, the hearings, and attorney fees, the employer loses in the end. House Bill 2255 is another disincentive for anyone to establish or conduct business in Oregon. Oregon should be crafting laws that encourage expansion of the workforce, not setting traps and snares that chase employers out of the state. We need laws that are objective, not subjective, and ripe for either dishonesty on the part of either the employee or the employer. This bill adds two financial risks for employers, forcing them to defend at high legal cost possible unwarranted charges. Our question is, why is this bill needed? As currently written, ORS 652.355 allows for a civil remedy when an employee is discriminated against for making wage claim. Is it really necessary to add another potential avenue for litigation against an employer? Thank you for the opportunity to speak on this issue today.
Dan, would you or any other able staff person want to?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dan Gardner, Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries. What this bill really does is clarifies an employer's responsibility and an employee's right when an employee alleges retaliation for exercising his or her wage-related rights. The examples Mr. Schellenberg gave, we go through a long process to investigate a claim and would never find for cause in a particular case where an employee, for instance, in his example, who normally does the lesser desired job, is off for the day, and that employee then ends up for a day doing that particular job. We really just don't find for cause in those types of cases. The you know, it really has to be a high level for someone to be actually guilty of retaliation. Usually that involves dismissal. You want to add anything?
Well, I think it might be helpful to add, I'm not sure what kinds of settlements that...
And for the record, ma'am.
I'm sorry, Marcia Ole Miller. Okay. I'm the legal policy advisor for the Bureau of Labor and Industries. And I'm not sure what kinds of settlement examples Mr. Schellenberg was referring to, but maybe the committee would want to keep in mind that currently there exist a number of other parallel laws to this law that we're talking about today. For instance, it's well settled and long been in the civil rights statutes that retaliation or discrimination against someone for complaining of a civil rights violation in the workplace has this type of protection. Retaliation for using your family leave rights, retaliation for using your workers' compensation or your unemployment rights. So this is not anything new. I think what's different about the current protection for retaliation for making a wage complaint is that it's in the wage and hour statutes and it's not under the same enforcement scheme as the civil rights statutes are that protect in the other areas. So what this bill would do is put this under the same enforcement scheme. And by doing that, for instance, with the concern that, you know, something could be misconstrued that the employer did innocently to the person just because it was in the same time frame as something the employee did or said about their wage rights, the standard for employment discrimination is whether the action happened because of the person's protected status. And so that's something, as Commissioner Gardner stated, that we take very seriously. There would have to be substantial evidence that it was because of that thing that that employee did, not just a happenstance kind of thing. So I hope those observations or comments are helpful to the committee.
All righty, then. Any questions? Representative Escobar.
Yes, Commissioner Gardner, Mr. Chair, Commissioner Gardner. How often does this happen?
Mr. Chair, Representative Esquivel, on a retaliation on a wage and hour complaint, I think probably our best person to ask that of would be Amy Clare, the head of the Civil Rights Division, if she has any statistics on that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and Representative Esquivel. For the record, my name is Amy Clare, and I'm the administrator of the Civil Rights Division at the Bureau of Labor and Industries. I can give you some anecdotal, and Brown have the hard stats, but it's not a huge amount of cases. I'd say we get probably 20 to 30 a year out of 2,000 to 2,500 formal complaints. And those are formal claims. We get a number of inquiries through our, you know, we have to remember there are approximately 27,000 intake inquiries that occur every year that the intake officers field and it never turns into a full claim. So I hope that answers your question.
And I believe to add to that, Mr. Chair, Representative Esquivel, that's 20 to 30 that have a complaint with us. It's not 20 to 30 that we would then find for cause.
All right. Any more questions? All righty then. Thank you. Hey, would anyone else like to testify to House Bill 2255? All right. I'm going to hold this over. There's some concerns by some of the members that I want to talk about. and then we'll bring it back either later in the week or next week, if that's the desire of the committee. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2255 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2259.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2259 increases the current time frame in which an employee may file a retaliation complaint against occupational safety and health laws from 30 to 90 days. It establishes that when a public records request has been made in regards to the complaint, neither the written complaint from the employee or an employee's representative or a memorandum containing the identity of the complainant may be disclosed under the current public records statute. There is an emergency clause effective on passage. There is no amendment before you. A minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact.
Okay. I don't have anyone signed up to testify on House Bill 2259. Would anyone like to testify today? If that's the case, I'm going to close the hearing on House Bill 2259, open a work session on House Bill 2259. Representative Holdy, are you ready for anything or not?
Just discussion.
Representative Esquivel.
Good discussion.
I'm entertaining a motion.
Oh, you're entertaining. Okay, I move House Bill 2259 to the floor with a due pass recommendation then.
All right, Representative Holby moves House Bill 2259 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there a discussion? Representative Holby gives her discussion.
No discussion, Mr. Chair.
Okay. All righty then. Kristen, call the roll.
Aye.
Oh, excuse me. She's always so quiet. I wouldn't even know she was gone.
Vice Chancellor. Aye.
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 All righty then. House Bill 2259 will go to the floor. Would anyone like to carry this bill?
I would.
Representative Esquivel would like to carry House Bill 2259. Thank you, Representative. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2259. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2260.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 2260 allows compensatory and punitive damages and other relief for unlawful employment practices based on race, religion, color, sex, national origin, marital status, or age. There's no amendment before you and no fiscal or revenue impacts.
Okay. I don't have anyone signed up to testify on House Bill 2260. Would anyone like to testify on House Bill 2260? All right, seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2260. I'll open the work session on House Bill 2260. Representative Holby.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2260 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Very good. Representative Holby moves House Bill 2260 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Kristen, would you please call the roll?
Aye.
Excused.
Aye.
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 Aye. House Bill 2260 will go to the floor with a due pass. Representative Rosenbaum, would you like to carry this bill on the floor?
I would be happy to.
Good. Well, you've done a lot of work on this stuff over the years, and I just think you deserve to carry this stuff on the floor. Alrighty then. I'm going to close the work session on the House Bill 2260. Is there anything for the good of the order? All right, we are adjourned.